Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law from Western North Carolina now. And today is August 16th, 2012. Thank you for listening to our broadcast. We almost had 1,000 listeners last week's show, so this is a growing channel, and we thank you so much for becoming part of this educational movement by telling your friends to listen, sending them a tweet, putting the link on your email, sharing it on Facebook, Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, MySpace, and all the other social networks. We thank you so much, and you can download each show to your hard drives or to your mobile device. There's so many ways for you to listen and favorite the show. We're going to be talking about exemptions and waivers and your rights for your vaccine exemptions and waivers in the United States when you send your kids to school today. And we're also going to touch a little bit upon the current events because there's an unlimited amount of news regarding vaccinations. I also want to say I'm so proud of Alan. He's with us here today for starting a new show with Dr. Meir Eisenstein on Blog Talk Radio and partnering with Mike Adams and Natural News because that means more people are going to learn about what they can do to educate themselves about vaccinations today. So, hello, Alan.
Good afternoon, Debbie. It's a pleasure to be here as always, and welcome back. We missed you last week. Things went fine, but we're very, very glad to have you back here with us this week.
Thank you. Family comes first.
It should and does.
Okay. So we're going to be talking about some important issues, especially as this is the season when parents are running around taking their kids to the doctor for checkups before school, getting their what do you call all the lists of items that you need at the store to prepare for the new semester or the new year, whether you're going to elementary, middle, high school, or college. They do have requirements about vaccines, and so this is something that's on the top of people's minds right now.
Well, and even more so, Debbie, in recent times, because a few years ago, you had to get a few shots to get started in school, and that was the end of it. But now they have DTaP and I think sometimes meningitis requirements for middle schoolers and high schoolers, and so I know I've mentioned this over and over again, the figure I had from a couple of years ago, that there were over 330 vaccines either in development or already on the market, and there really is no light at the end of this tunnel. We're going to see more and more vaccines. We have been, and I think we will continue to see more and more vaccines be required of kids in school, but more and more vaccines required of adults and new categories of adults. We're seeing that unfold in recent times as well. But today I wanted to focus on school vaccines, and also, as you said, we'll hit on some news items. There is just so much going on in the news. We could spend the whole show just listing through the last couple of weeks' titles and brief mention of articles. So usually the articles we talk about here on Homeopathy World Community, Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., are articles that are linked from the Pandemic Response Project's news page. It's pandemicresponseproject.com, and encourage folks to go to that site, a couple times a week or so to skim articles and read the ones that are of interest to you, almost exclusively vaccine or other closely related issues having to do with policy and law, and in some cases the medical side of vaccines. One in particular caught my attention, Debbie, I thought I would jump right into you first if we're ready to do that.
Oh, well, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. I didn't know whether I had my sound on. I wanted to make a correction for those folks who got my broadcast announcement for today's show. I gave a quote, but I gave the wrong author, so I want to make a correction on that one. And I sent, it says, get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. And I didn't give the right author, so I'll tell it right now. That is Bob Marley. He's a Jamaican singer, composer, guitarist, and he is an advocate. So we are advocates, and that's the purpose of our show, that not only do we create awareness, you learn a little bit something that maybe wakes you up, but now you have to take legislative action some way, whether you're getting together with other folks in your neighborhood, your community, your state, like the NVIC.com website, or is it not .net or .org? I think you'll find it.
Yeah, NVIC.org, but their what they call their advocacy portal is NVICAdvocacy.org, but you can get there from it's linked from NVIC.org as well. The advocacy portal is a place where people can go online to find out what's going on in their state legislatively with vaccine issues. And that site makes it very easy for people to participate in vaccine legislative issues with a minimum of time and effort, because Don Richardson and others with the NVIC have put this together in a way to enable us all to participate, even if we have full-time jobs and families and don't have the time to go out and launch and head up our own legislative initiative. You can participate in the process through the NVIC's advocacy portal. I strongly encourage folks to sign up for that and participate.
Thanks. Okay, so I interrupted you, so now let's get up and stand up and do what we want intended to do.
Oh, no interruption at all, Debbie. Glad to have the correction there. Great quote. This first article I want to talk about briefly is one that comes from Mercola.com, Dr. Joseph Mercola. His website puts out lots of good information about alternative health generally, but a lot of it is about vaccines and vaccine-related issues. This is one just talking about how the FDA is, and this is, I'm quoting from the title here, shocking story reveals how the FDA is recklessly abandoning drug safety. There have been whistleblowers in the FDA who have stood out in the past, spoken out in the past, saying that the FDA is not in reality doing what it was set up to do, that is looking out for the safety of the American public, but is really, in effect, just a front for the pharmaceutical industry, that it's really just there to create approval for drugs to the financial benefit of the pharmaceutical industry, but often in a way that is reckless, according to some people's claims anyway, and causes or risks unnecessary death and disability or injury to people from products that are not properly evaluated and approved when they shouldn't be. So I wanted to actually, I usually don't like to read an article over the air, but there was a section here that I wanted to read because it was, sometimes there are parts that are just compelling enough that you want to give it straight from the horse's mouth here. So this is about a drug reviewer for the FDA who worked in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research within the FDA for about 10 years, from 1998 to 2008. And in a recent interview, he revealed how the FDA bypassed or ignored safety issues on major drugs that were approved during his employment. Now, he was part of the Evaluation and Research Center for the FDA. And so it's his job to make sure that those things that get approved are safe and effective at a level that would justify getting approval. And what he's essentially saying here is that often what gets approved shouldn't get approved. So the quote is this: in the Center for Drugs Evaluation and Research, as in the Center for Devices, the honest employee fears the dishonest employee. And I tell you, just that piece right there is almost enough to send chills down my spine, because we, the American public, most of us, rely on the FDA to ensure that the drugs and treatments that we get from the pharmaceutical industry are safe and effective. And what we're finding out here is that the way the system works is that it puts a much higher priority on drug company profits than it does on citizen safety. But continuing, there is also irrefutable evidence that managers have placed the nation at risk by corrupting the evaluation of drugs and by interfering with our ability to ensure the safety and efficacy of drugs. While I was at the FDA, drug reviewers were clearly told not to question drug companies and that our job was to approve drugs. We were prevented, except in rare instances, from presenting findings at advisory committees. So this is somebody who spent 10 years working for the FDA. And I don't know if it would even be possible to get some sort of independent and objective survey of FDA employees collectively, although the Union for Concerned Scientists did survey federal agency scientists a few years ago, including those with the FDA, and found that across the board in federal agencies, a significant number of scientists reported things like they were told to change the findings of their research, or their research findings were ignored and policy was enacted directly contrary to their research and that sort of thing. So the politics that goes on in the FDA and the federal agencies generally is very thick, very troubled, and we should be concerned about that.
Right. I was thinking when you talked about that issue with the employees who are working and the employers and the dishonesty and honesty factor, I would think that a lot of people change their job. Number one reason is job satisfaction. And if they are feeling unease, if they're feeling frightened, or they're not valued as a scientist, as a researcher, or a physician, whoever they are working for the government in that respect, that I would wonder if there's been any data on how many people, the turnover rate in that area.
That's an excellent question. I don't have any information on that myself, but that's definitely something that would be very interesting to look into.
That's an assignment for you to do. That's your next assignment, lead, to find out. I mean, to who has left? Maybe it's like a undercover job. Who has left the agency due to their fear or their job dissatisfaction?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's very telling is that people who speak out are often doing that after they've already left. There are a couple employees, you know, that recently filed a lawsuit against Merck, former Merck employees. In fact, they hadn't worked for Merck in 10 years or more before the lawsuit was filed. If you criticize the FDA, whether or not you're an employee or federal agencies, you try to expose corruption, you put your job or your career at risk. And this is really so backwards. The people who step out and speak out about such things ought to be heralded as heroes and given broad publicity and support for that. And that sort of behavior should be encouraged. And what happens in the current political climate is that employees are afraid to speak out. They're afraid to report the problems or corruption that they see. I mean, I hear, for example, from nurses on a regular basis around the country who say, tell me how I can avoid the vaccine that I'm required to get at my job. And by the way, there's, you know, five other people in my department who don't want the vaccine either, but they're all afraid to say anything because they feel like if they even ask for an exemption that they're going to be singled out and fired. That's the kind of climate that people in the healthcare industry live in. And so the extent to which you feel as an individual dependent upon your job, that's the extent to which most people will refuse or be afraid of or fail to report any problems they see in their excuse me, company, business, profession, what have you. So we really need to take steps, and I don't know what those would be, but to change the climate, the employee-employer climate in the healthcare industry, without any exception, every single healthcare worker I've talked to that works at a hospital says or corroborates, this is my language, but the essence is corroborated absolutely 100% so far, that the hospital work environment is militant, that you do what you're told, you're expected to do what you're told and not question anything, not object to anything, not think for yourself. And I hear this not from only nurses, I hear this from doctors as well. So it's not a situation where, you know, the doctors are at the top and it applies to everybody else. It seems to apply to everybody in the hospital without exception. And this is not the place where you, where I would think, as a common sense point of view anyway, where you would want, if there's any environment where I'd want people to have the freedom to think independently, to experiment within reason, of course, to explore alternative solutions, would be in healthcare. Because while you can say, yes, these five people all have diabetes or whatever it is, each one is going to be unique in their particular symptom or the way their body expresses whatever disease or condition they have, and they may be very significant differences in the way that those things need to be dealt with or treated. So just the, of course, you know that far better than me as a homeopath, Debbie, but
right,
it's
so,
a disturbing,
you know,
disturbing thing.
Did you want to talk any more about this type of issue, about the environment of say drug safety and things like that, or did you want to go ahead and talk more about the getting kids into school with or without vaccines, that issue, for answering questions that parents might have, and then we can go back into the news section?
Sure, we'll see how the time lasts. Well, what I'd like to do is give a real brief, if that's possible for me, a real brief introduction.
I don't think it's possible, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. How about as brief as I can make it then? Overview of exemption and waivers, and then a brief, as I can make, an overview about the school environment. Because I think in both instances, most people don't realize how broad and multifaceted it is. So first, the issue of exemptions and waivers in the U.S. kind of collectively or generally covers many, many different areas. When people talk about exemptions, the first thing that most people think about is school, and probably most people don't get much, if any, beyond that in terms of what they think about when we talk about vaccine exemptions. But vaccines, there's, depending on how you count, there's well over a dozen different categories or subcategories. And for me, a different category or subcategory arises whenever there's different law that applies. So that's how I count it, but well over a dozen different categories and subcategories where the question comes up. So just a real quick list of some of them. There's military, but that includes military members, military families, military schools for children, and different branches of the military. So sometimes there's different law involved with all those different issues just within the category of military vaccine requirements and exemptions. There are immigration vaccines required, so there's a waiver process there. There are healthcare workers, as we talked about, increasingly in the last couple of years, hospitals around the country in particular, and other healthcare employers requiring their employees to get vaccinated or lose their job. There are what I refer to as vaccine custody disputes, which is a family law issue, but when parents split up and they're in a custody battle over the kids, and sometimes we'll have a situation where one parent wants to vaccinate the kids and the other one doesn't. And I find that family law turns don't know how to approach this particular issue because it's unique in the world of custody disputes and requires a different analysis legally and a different approach in terms of how you deal with those issues. And then, of course, the school arena, but even the school arena itself has many subcategories. We have public and private schools, and in some states the exemptions apply to private schools, but in some states they don't or may not. We have different levels that sometimes have different laws in terms of preschool, grade school, and college. At the college level, there's even another subcategory. If you're in a college healthcare curriculum where you have to do clinical work in local hospitals or other healthcare facilities, such as nursing students and med students and other healthcare curriculums, the hospitals require that the students be vaccinated, and that's not something that the state exemption laws apply to. So, again, there's a whole other arena there. So there's all these different categories and subcategories, but with school vaccines in particular, and we usually are thinking about grade school or child care preschool and grade school when we talk about school vaccines, usually the same law, but not always, the same exemption laws will apply to all these different levels, and even the college level as far as most college curriculums and the classroom, college classrooms are concerned. But the laws vary from state to state. And this is an issue where the federal government lacks the authority under the Constitution to mandate vaccines for state residents. And that's why the laws are state by state. And states being autonomous to one degree or another, and the political systems function the way they do, the laws, both with regard to the vaccine requirements and the immunizations available and the procedures for exercising the exemptions, are going to vary from state to state. So most, as most people know, and jump in any time with a comment or question here, Debbie, because I don't want to eat up the entire rest of the show by myself here, but...
Well, I'm listening to this huge long list of categories, and most people do not even have that thought in their mind. You know, each person is thinking about their personal situation. So the person who does have a family in the military, who is at a station somewhere or is moved to another country and then comes back, I mean, all of these, or a mother who is home with their children alone while it could be either the mother or the father now could be away, stationed away, while the other parent is home, or even the grandparent is home taking care of the children. That is something that is in their mind only. Then there's the other folks who are simply immigrating into the country, and every year we have such a large wave of people coming in. Every single different group must have different requirements, and the process to go through the forms and the waivers, the exemptions, must be fine-tuned for them. And that's where your knowledge comes in, because most people just think about what you said, taking your small kid to school for the first time, signing the papers, handing them in, and getting them registered for school. You usually do that once at the beginning when you first start your kid into a new school.
Well, and some states are implementing laws now that require the exemption to be exercised every year. I mean, from the state's point of view, and mainstream views on healthcare and vaccines still dominate and dictate the laws. So we may have very different opinions about what the laws should be, but of course the starting place is, well, what are they right now? What are our rights right now? And the policy in every state, public health policy, favors vaccines. And so anytime there's some indication, whether ultimately even true or not, that more people are exercising exemptions, the knee-jerk reaction of the public health departments, state health departments, and state legislatures is going to be to enact rules or laws that discourage exemptions or make it harder to get exemptions, because they're thinking from the point of view, we have to maximize immunization rates to protect society. So, you know, we have a monstrous education process and project upon us and ahead of us in terms of educating state legislatures and legislators about the real science as it pertains to vaccines and infectious disease and the available remedies and the problems with vaccines and the corresponding rights that we should have that but really don't have. But the laws are different in every state, and yet there are some similarities and distinct differences that we should take note of in order to be able to make the most informed and effective decisions in terms of exercising exemptions to avoid vaccines. So one of the first rules of thumb here is that the starting place is always what do your state's statutes and regulations say. My website, vaccinerights.com, has an exemption page where I link to three other sites that post state school exemption laws. And so many times you can look at just the state statute and you have the whole story, but other times you really need to look at both the statutes and state health department regulations to get the full story or the full picture. But that's your starting place. It's not the ending place necessarily by any means. But what you find when you look at statutes and regulations is that all 50 states have medical exemptions. But I tell you, medical exemptions are difficult to get. The specifics, again, may vary from state to state, but generally you'll have to meet some predefined list of contraindications. And if you have such and such a condition, then you can avoid this vaccine permanently. It's difficult medically to be exempt to all vaccines, and vaccines are often, with medical exemptions, only temporary. And if you really do qualify, if you really do have a health condition or conditions, then you certainly want to avoid the vaccines even more so than maybe a healthy person may want to avoid them who just recognizes the unknown level, the unknown risk of potential serious injury or death that comes with vaccines. And I say unknown because even the CDC and FDA have both acknowledged that 90 to 99% of adverse events are never even reported. So we have no data to make any sort of even reasonable guesstimate about whether or not there's any sort of net benefit from vaccines. But anyway, having said that, you need to start with your state statute and regulations and see what exemptions you have and what the procedure is. 48 states, all but Mississippi and West Virginia, have religious, and then about 20 states, mostly states west of the Mississippi. I think Ohio, Vermont, and Maine may be the only exceptions on the east side that have philosophical exemptions, but most of them are in the Midwest and West. Only about 20 states, but because one of them is California, it actually represents more than half of the United States. So most people have access to philosophical or personal exemptions. As a brief note, even in states where you can qualify for a personal or philosophical exemption, I recommend that people consider claiming or exercising a religious exemption anyway if they can qualify. And what qualifies for that is really, really broad. Just about anybody who's not an atheist can potentially qualify for a religious exemption in any of the different contexts that we talked about. The religious exemptions, even when you're talking about a state law, state religious exemption law, it comes with federal First Amendment rights, the First Amendment constitutional rights. And federal law is a higher legal authority than state law. There are some instances where having that additional federal law right can make a difference. So just something for people to think about generally. But in any event, you want to see what exemptions you have and look closely at the procedure for how do you get the exemption. Now, for philosophical personal exemptions, there's usually you don't have to justify or explain your beliefs, you just exercise the exemption. So you look for the procedure, and that's going to vary, of course, from state to state. Some states will have forms, some states will have, you check a box or sign a form or write a short statement just saying you're opposed to the vaccines or whatever. But look to see what your state says and do what it says. There are a lot of absolutely wonderful anti-vaccine websites or pro-vaccine choice websites with information on the medical side. When they get into the exemption rights and procedures arena, in my experience, the ones I've looked at often end up with kind of a mixture of accurate and inaccurate information. And it's a very sensitive topic for me to discuss because I mean absolutely no disrespect. These folks are all my peers in raising awareness, and there are people who've been out there for years doing a wonderful job helping to raise awareness. And many times the things they post on their websites, people use and it works for them. And that's great. But there have been times when people have gone to anti-vaccine websites and they've lost exemption rights by relying on information that wasn't fully accurate. And so I just advise caution when you're looking at things on the Internet. You really need to go to authoritative sources if it's really important to you. So go to your own state's legislative website. Most states, if not all states at this point, have laws you can search online. You can go look up the laws yourself or go to my website and follow the links to other sites that post the laws. Many people are not comfortable calling a local health department, but usually, not always, but usually you can call a local health department and get accurate information about what the exemptions are, what the procedure is. Now, some states will have, it's different every state, but some states will have a procedure in statutes, and then they'll have, the health department will create a form, and in effect, you have maybe even two different potential procedures. That can be a little confusing, I think. But usually if there's a form, you're not in a position of having to state your religious beliefs or whatever. You check boxes in effect and sign it or whatever. It's in those few states, though, where you do have to state your beliefs. North Carolina and Illinois are just two I know off the top of my head, but several other states do this as well. If your option is a religious exemption and you have to state your beliefs, and that also occurs with healthcare employees, people in the military, immigration. That's a place where I do strongly recommend that people consider consulting an attorney or doing something to get information, reliable information about what does and doesn't qualify for a religious exception. Because this is an arena where the common sense approach is not always consistent with what the law says does and doesn't qualify, and that's sort of unfortunate. And this is just something that happens with law generally. Sometimes the law does exactly what you would expect it to do or think it should do, but other times it doesn't. And in this particular arena, it's not, in my understanding, it's not because the law is unreasonable or irrational. Now, we might think it's unreasonable or irrational to mandate vaccines. I don't think that law is reasonable, frankly. But the religious exemption law, in terms of what does and doesn't qualify as a religious belief, on the one hand, it's really, really broad. Just about anybody who's not an atheist can potentially qualify. It doesn't matter whether you go to church. It doesn't matter what church you go to. If you do, under the law, under the First Amendment, all that matters is that you have a sincerely held religious belief. That part of it is broad and fairly straightforward and simple. But when you have to state your beliefs, how the law works there is not as straightforward. And it's not that it's unreasonable, it's just that the analysis isn't really readily accessible to people who haven't been immersed
what,
in
what do you mean when
beliefs.
You have to state your beliefs? If you just state your belief and say, religiously, I don't believe that vaccines are part of my belief system. What do you have to say?
Well, in some cases, you have to write a statement, but you don't have to explain what your beliefs are. You can say something like, I'm requesting or exercising the exemption for my child because it's against our religious beliefs. You know, sometimes what the law requires is something simple like that. If there's not a form that you just sign a form or whatever, sometimes they'll have to ask you to write a statement. But other times the law will require you to either explain your beliefs or to state your beliefs that are opposed to immunization. And what I have found in my experience, after working with hundreds of clients and families over many years at this point, is that the vast majority of people, when they sit down to write a statement of beliefs on their own, they will include things that can potentially complicate or even completely undermine the exemption right if they're in a situation where the authorities who are going to receive this statement have the authority to scrutinize it. And the reason that occurs, how and why and what to say and not say is not a short answer question. But the reason that occurs is because the way the law works in this arena is not fully consistent with what most people would think or expect, just giving a very reasonable common sense approach to it. So let me give you one quick example.
It sounds like the less you say, the better off you are.
It's going to depend on what the law requires. You know, you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis in terms of what law applies. And then if you have to state your beliefs, you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis with what each individual wants to say or what their beliefs are. Let me give you a real quick example, because I'm talking in very abstract terms, and it's not that you can only go so far with a description on that level. There's federal legal precedent that says if you copy a statement, it can be considered insincere and rejected for that reason alone. So if you copy something from one of these wonderful vaccine websites, and these people are trying to help people, and they are helping a lot of people, if you copy something, that can backfire on you if you're in a situation where the authorities have the authority to scrutinize your beliefs, and they exercise that authority. So whether or not authorities may scrutinize the beliefs is also something that varies from state to state depending on the wording of each state's laws. In some states, they can't scrutinize the beliefs. You write the statement, that's the end of it. But
well, Alan, it seems to me that there are only so many ways that you can state that belief. I mean, if you took a survey of 100 people and they said in their own words, it is my belief that vaccinations are not allowed in my religion.
But that's a statement that's not explaining what your beliefs are. If you're in a situation where you got to explain your beliefs, you have to state what the belief is or what the beliefs are that are opposed to vaccines.
I can't say. I adamantly do not believe in vaccines for myself and my family. I mean, is that not how else can I say it more deeply? But, you know, I'm an advocate against it. I don't want it, you know.
Saying you don't want it is not saying what the belief is. That simply is saying that you have a belief.
I have a belief.
I'll give you the simplest, shortest example. Because where we are, Debbie, in North Carolina, the law says you have to state the beliefs that are opposed to immunizations. So someone might say, I believe that vaccines show a lack of faith in God. I believe in God's protection. Therefore, I can't vaccinate. You know, vaccinating would violate my faith in God. Now, I'm not recommending that as a complete statement that anybody write, but if that is what somebody believed, if it's religious in nature, if it's sincerely held, that could potentially be a complete and total invalid statement. Now, one that's that short risks looking or appearing insincere just because of the brevity, so that's why I'm saying I don't recommend that as a complete statement, but as an example of a belief. In the simplest one I can think of off the top of my head, a belief that somebody has that they're opposed to vaccines. Now, I thought, honestly, that at a certain point I'd start seeing the same thing over and over again in my client's statements. I mean, because copying is grounds for rejection, the safest, legally safest statements or best statements are going to be ones that are unique to each person or family. And so I work with clients one-on-one to help them develop their own personal statement. And I have a detailed list of guidelines about do's and don'ts and things that make a statement stronger or weaker from a legal perspective. But ultimately, people have to say what's true for them, and they have to say state beliefs that fall within what the law says are valid religious beliefs. So there's law that says, legal precedent that says if you copy a statement, that can be considered insincere. So if you're in a situation where your beliefs can be scrutinized, and not everybody is, but if you are in one of those situations, the last thing you want to do is go to an anti-vaccine website and copy one of their letters or statements or affidavits and submit that. Because if they do scrutinize it, it only takes a few seconds to plug a phrase into a search engine, and someone can say, here's the website they copied it from, and
right.
It gets rejected.
So basically, each person has to search their own soul, go into a little meditation, think about their life, think about their history, think about their family, what is their own personal reason in relationship to them and their relationship to God, and that will get them a closer, unique response to fill in.
Well, I thought, frankly, I'd start seeing at some point the same thing over and over again, and I've worked with hundreds of families and clients at this point, and I have seen, to my pleasant surprise, that the overwhelming majority of statements that I see from clients are really more like snowflakes and fingerprints. So I never have had a client where I felt like I needed to say, in fact, I specifically discourage or recommend not trying to sound unique. Everybody thinks and writes a little bit differently, and I think the way our minds work and the way each of us works with language is probably analogous to fingerprints and snowflakes, that everybody's going to be a little different. So being unique is not something I think anybody has to make an explicit agenda item. I think that will happen as a byproduct of people just putting something in their own words. Now, I have a lot of Christian clients who will cite some of the same Bible passages. I have
right.
a lot of clients of different religions who will cite some of the same ideas or concepts, but it's all that's inevitable. But curiously and fortunately for all concerned, when people just put things in their own words, they come up with something unique. But again, if you're in that minority of situations where you need to write a statement of beliefs and explain it, and if the authorities have the authority to scrutinize it, that's where I recommend that people consider either doing a consultation with an attorney experienced in this area, or one way or another getting information about what does and doesn't qualify.
Can you tell us again the states that have the authority to do that?
I don't have a list of them. I'm sorry about that. But
okay.
I do have links to the laws, and people can go look that up. And the vast majority of these laws are written in plain English that anybody can read and understand. So that's rarely the problem where someone says, I don't really understand what this law says or means. It's more that people need to recognize that they do need to look at their state. There's no such thing, for example, as a generic or national affidavit for state school exemption. You know, you have to look at each state's laws individually to see what their procedure is.
Right. So when they do go to that place on the internet or to their local authority department, and they pick up the form and they read it through carefully, it will be quite obvious to them whether their state is going to have the legal authority to scrutinize what they say. It's going to say something there that's going to tip them off to that.
It is usually apparent from the wording. I can't say that it always is, and I just want to clarify that some states have forms and some don't. And some forms you can get online, and some you have to go to a local health department to get or whatever. Again, the procedure is different in every state, and so you need to see what your state does and what your state's procedure is. But when you read the statutes and where there are health department regulations, the majority of the time it's going to be pretty clear what the procedure is. And sometimes clues, I mean, the language, again, is different in every state, but sometimes there are simple clues that can help you understand. So, for example, if the law says, in effect, if you do this, if a person does this, they shall have the exemption, is different than if the law says, if you do this, you may be exempt. So you can look, for example, for words like may or shall. And the word may, frankly, I will say that one can be confusing because sometimes the way the word may is used, it does mean absolute. And other times the way the word may is used, it clearly means permissive, as in we can change our mind, so to speak.
Right, so that's confusing.
It can be confusing, but most of the time when I've looked at exemption laws, they've been pretty clear what they mean.
Okay. Well, we'll just call you if we have a question.
Well,
we shall and may
welcome.
Call you.
you both shall and may call.
And I wanted to make a comment about what you were saying, how the way we not only write, but the way we speak and everything is a fingerprint and a snowflake to each of us. They are, this is kind of a side note, they are using some kind of computerized robot to scan through your articles on the internet to know who is writing it. They can tell who the author is when they scan anything that you write on the internet based on the way the sentence structure, the paragraph structure, what words that you use, and in what order. It's unbelievable.
That's interesting, but it just sort of reaffirms what I was
speaking
to from a little bit more intuitive level, that takes it almost the next step, that there are particular patterns of word usage that individuals use, and that is what creates our unique individual style, I suppose, of writing. So that's fascinating.
I just wanted to affirm that for you. What you said is true, and it even, you know, if a person questions that, there are things that can affirm it, that when you write something and it's coming from you personally, from your heart, from just whatever it is that you want to say, you're going to recognize your voice. They're going to know that this is authentic and that it is not a copied statement.
You know, that raises another point for me that I was dealing with actually just this morning with a current client's statement writing process. People will often, even when they write their own statements, they will still often pull things off the internet that they'll include. And one of the things that I've seen intermittently but over and over again over time is that people will cite law in their statement. I guess it makes one feel more
authoritative.
Yeah, that would be a good word for it. They're saying, you know, I'm asserting my right, and here's my right. And I honestly do not very often see people correctly cite law in their own statements. And I don't say that meaning in any way whatsoever to be condescending or critical or whatever. The legal systems that we have in this country are inherently complex. And I think law and legal systems ultimately reflects the inherent complexity of our current civilization and society. And when you stop and think about it, we're enormously complex critters in our cultures and societies. And our legal systems, whether it's a reflection or not, our legal systems are also inherently complex. And so to understand law and how it works, even simple legal issues can quickly become complicated when you start taking them apart, you know, well, what happens with this or what happens with that? And even things that seem simple at first become quickly complex. So I don't say this with any sort of judgment or condescension, but it is, this is one of those situations where a little bit of knowledge is dangerous because people will misunderstand things. And well, first of all, there's no exemption law anywhere that's going to say to get the exemption, you must cite the law. I've never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, it's not a requirement. It's not what gets you the exemption. So even if you do it correctly, it's probably not going to help you any. I have, on occasion, suggested that people attach to a statement where say, here in North Carolina, for example, where the law does say, state what your beliefs are. I sometimes will say, attach a copy of the statute, because here in North Carolina, the statute is particularly simple. It's two sentences, and there are no regulations that provide additional rights or clarification on rights or procedures or anything. There's one regulation that says, in effect, And when we say religious, we mean religious. You can't use a philosophical exemption, but to me that's clear in the statute, so it doesn't really add anything. So really, it's a two-sentence statute. So it's easy to attach that, but it's not something that's part of your statement, and it's certainly not required. The only reason I will sometimes recommend that people consider attaching a copy of the statute is just so that the people reading it, if they have any confusion about what the law is, there it is, and they can go look it up. I mean, they don't have to go look it up. There it is, and they can read it. Because in one sense, when you're claiming or exercising an exemption, you are, lost my train of thought there, but in effect, we're ultimately asking a favor from the people that who are receiving this. Even if you have a clear, absolute legal right, the people on the other side of this are always the ones potentially with the leverage. They can, for reasons genuine or not, they're in the position to refuse you or reject you, and then we are the ones that then have to go through whatever hoops or steps are necessary to enforce the right that we think we have. So you're asking a favor of people. So if you can give them a little more information, here's the law, then maybe that helps them to understand that you do have a right. In other words, we need to, this was the point I was getting to a moment ago, we need to, in a sense, do whatever it takes to put the ball in their court, to set things up, if we can, in a way that if they have any doubts, they feel like they have to go ask their legal folks rather than just rejecting it, saying, no, I don't agree with this. And so if you attach a copy of the statute, if it's a short, simple statute, then maybe someone on the other side, if they have any confusion, maybe that will clear it up for them and the ball will remain in their court, so to speak. But it's not a requirement to cite any law. And I've seen people cite laws that aren't even laws.
Right. Well, that sounds like, you know, you're just making a little bit more efficient. But I think at this point in time, with the vaccine issue so prominent everywhere, that when you're sending this form to the appropriate organization authority, that they already know what the law is in their state. I mean, that's like absolutely, they have that as probably pasted up right in front of them on their wall or on their desk. You know, this is the law.
Well, a lot of times, it really depends on where you are. And a lot of times people are in relatively communities. You know, if you're in a metropolitan area, probably they've dealt with it before. But if you're out in a rural county somewhere, they may not have seen it before. Or there may be somebody new in the job position. So a lot of times people on the other side of this issue, they're worried many times about their job. They're not familiar with this. They're uncomfortable with it. Just get the vaccine so I don't have to figure out how this works, because I don't want my butt to be on the line for not, you know, for allowing somebody exemption when I wasn't supposed to allow it. Or they may be thinking, well, you got to be crazy. You're putting all these people at risk. You know, just get the vaccines. I'm not going to accept this. I'm not going to be responsible for everybody getting sick and dying because you're not vaccinating your kid. I mean, there are people who really think and believe like that. And so it can be, you know, the first question is always, what is the law? What are the legal boundaries? Sometimes they're clear, sometimes they're not. But the second question that comes up frequently is, what is the practical reality? What's the lay of the land, you know, where you're dealing with this? Because even if you know the law and know your rights, other people don't necessarily know them. Or other people, even if they know them, may disagree with it and sometimes act out of that disagreement and not out of their proper legal authority or whatever the boundaries or limits, you know, in any given situation for them may be. So
wow.
it can be a complicated issue. And that's true to one degree or another with any legal issue. I keep using a really extreme example to make a simple point. The serial killer will keep on killing until he's physically restrained, and it's not because he thinks that what he's doing is legal. So people can ultimately do whatever they want to do regardless of what the law says, unless they're actually physically forced or prohibited or whatever. So even though we have a legal right, we're still ultimately in the position of asking a favor from the people that we're dealing with, because they are in the position, if they choose to say, I don't care what your rights are. You're not going to school here without a shot, or you're not working here without your shots. I see
Well, you know what you said, going back to what you said a little while ago, giving that explanation to my question, what you're telling me is you cannot take anything for granted.
Well, in this arena,
everything has to be basically spelled out as clearly, as fully and completely as possible from your side of the bench. You know, that if you're on one side and this is your position, that you have to do everything to support it, because you don't know who is reading your forms or your paper or your deposition or whatever you want to call it.
Well, yes. And here's the deal with regard to those situations where you do have to state your beliefs. First of all, you don't want to be in a situation where somebody rejects it and they catch you on some sort of legal technicality, and then you're in the position of saying, oops, what I really meant to say was, and you try to, you know, it's hard to fix this retrospectively. So if you have a legally sound statement of beliefs, the odds of getting rejected, at least theoretically, go way down, because there'll be no legitimate reason to reject it. But if somebody does reject it anyway, then you're able to defend it. You're able to come back and say, well, no, wait, this was a proper statement. Here's the legal precedent that says this qualifies, something to that effect. So you want a legally defensible statement, and in order to have that, you have to be clear about what does and doesn't qualify. And again, that's not a short answer question, and that's why I do consultations for people and with people around the country when they are in a situation where they have to state their beliefs.
Yeah, well, we're out of time, and I wanted to let the listeners know that not only do you give your assistance legal advice as a real expert in this area to the folks who are sending their kids to school, immigrants, military personnel, healthcare workers in every field, students who are working with hospitals and things like that, but you are also a national lecturer or talk. What are you, speaker? You know, you do keynote talks and for events, or if you want to get in touch with you for anything that is coming up that you want to, maybe even a school district or something would like to have you speak to the teachers, to the nurses in the field, or to the parents. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of places where you go and educate people about things that they really don't know. And today's program was so really good. I really appreciated what you had to explain. It was very thorough. I felt like I was sitting in your office with you as a client, getting this, you know, incredible advice, and I didn't even pay for it. So I thank you.
I'll send you a bill.
Okay. So, Alan, tell the folks who are listening where they can contact you and also about your ebook.
Well, vaccinerights.com has my contact information, and the ebook is available there as well. The only publication I know of anywhere that goes in-depth and authoritatively to explain the background about the law generally and then about vaccine exemption law specifically, so that you can make informed and effective vaccine exemption decisions, which includes understanding when you do or don't need or may want to consult an attorney. And, of course, many times people don't need that. But if you do, I'm available to help with that. And love to do public speaking and also work with vaccine legislative activism. I've worked with activists in many states around the country. I'm available to help people in that arena as well. So
thank you
for the opportunity.
Okay. We're going to do our exit, and we will see you next Thursday at noon. Don't forget the Health In Show Monday at 11 a.m. We're going to have Todd Rowe, MD, head of the Medical College for Physicians and Homeopaths. So we're going to talk about change. It's going to be very exciting. Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together like people. Let your truth be unfurled.